This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
What does Colgate mean by live life to the brightest? Could it be a rich glass of red sipped inside a Parisian cafe on a snowy night when my gaze is met by a tall, mysterious... I mean, brushing as directed with Colgate Optic White Pro Series Toothpaste gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 3 days, so you can live life to the brightest and finish that glass without worrying about teeth stains. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 468, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Oh, don't you dare look back, just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back, she said shut up and dance with me. This woman is my destiny, she said hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 468. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hey, everybody.
And a dying Josh Flanagan.
I'm fine.
You sound real great.
I know. Real I bet healthy, it gets better.
Robust.
I'm going to try not to cough in the mic.
But I am going to eat cookies.
Happy New Year's, you guys.
Well, that's right.
Laughter helps.
Actually, you know what? It's funny. I forgot to mention this last week, and I was kicking myself after the show, but we're entering our 10th year of podcasting now with this year of 2015. We started in 2005, and this is our 10th year of podcasting and our 15th year with ifanboy.com.
Oh my God.
Say, Connor.
Yeah.
Is this the year we're going to break out big?
Maybe.
Have we got our 10,000 hours in yet? We must.
We must it doesn't have feel like 10 years. Doesn't well, feel like 10 years at all.
Well, you weren't.
Feels you like here. 2 years. Yeah. It was like, and then Statler and Waldorf up in the balcony. It feels like 30 years.
Paul, how old were you 15 years ago?
I was 15 because I'm 30. Thank God that was an easy math question.
We were not 15 when we started that fanboy.
We weren't that far off, to be honest.
No, we weren't. We were 22, I think.
I was 23.
Yeah, 22, 23. Oh, it was the end of the year, so we were all 23 by that point. All right, so we are.
So what have you guys been doing for 10 years? How would you describe what it is that we do on the show?
We talk about comics. We like them, and we read them every week. We read a bunch of them. One of us is chosen to pick the best book they read that week. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that on this here podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest, fun stuff, sometimes sad stuff, sometimes silly stuff. It depends on the week. But before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show, so there will probably be spoilers. So if you haven't read your books, pause the show and come back. When you're done, everyone will be happier that way. And also, please stay tuned all the way to the end of the show, because we have a bunch of important announcements having to do with the show. So you want to hear those, and so stick around till the very end. But until then, Paul Montgomery had the pick of the week.
I did. I did have the pick, and it was an interesting kind of week. There was a momentous book that came out, And unlike Josh, I decided to go with it. I didn't go with some weird obscure thing. I decided to go with the easy choice. But actually, it really was an easy choice. And when we talk about the pick of the week,
picking up my teeth grinding.
when we talk about the pick of the week, like, what is it? Like, is it objectively the best book that we read, or is it just like, is it subjective? What is it? And we kind of usually say it's the thing we got the most out of. The thing that really tickled our fancy that particular week or day. And for me, I was just completely impressed and blown away by Star Wars #1 from Marvel Comics by Jason Aaron and John Cassaday. And I think I could really sum it up by saying it just totally captures, if you love those original three films, the three existing Star Wars films that are there. Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to a fourth one coming out soon. We'll see. If you love the tone of that, especially the first one, because this takes place between A New Hope and The Empire Strikes Back.
Yellow Jacket Luke.
That was one of the big questions going in. I knew that it was going to take place between those two movies, but was it pre-dirt bike accident, Mark Hamill, or post? But then I guess in the chronology of the movies that
the accident happens with the Wampa attack.
With the Wampa attack, right. Yeah. But he still looks a little bit kind of haggard. A little bit.
I sound just like him.
You do.
And so this just felt like they completely nailed the tone and voice of Star Wars, and the jokes made me laugh, but they're also kind of lame in like a New Hope kind of way. Mm-hmm. Just the characterization of Han, the way he interacts with everybody, feels like Han. So that feels like when Harrison Ford had that light in his eyes.
Are you sure?
Wasn't just begging for death.
It's interesting because I was reading this and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to talk about this because Star Wars is one of those properties that I'm so close to that. It's completely unobjective.
I didn't know you guys had a connection to Star Wars.
Yeah, we don't like to talk about it very often. Yeah. But
I don't know if you know, but that movie came out the year we were born. And apparently, like a lot of young men our age, and I don't mean to sexify that, but let's be honest, we like the movie a lot.
So I liked this quite a bit, but by the end of it, I really had to recalibrate my brain because at first I was like, I don't know if that's how Han would say that, or I don't know if that's how C-3PO would say that. But at a certain point, you just kind of have to let it go, and that's what I had to get to at the end. Like, I thought, I'm not even going to get in. I don't want to.
See, you know, I didn't. No, you can get into it because that's important because I didn't feel that way. I thought, oh, okay, you really got the cadences down. And if anything, and this is going to be. I liked it a lot. I'm going to start with that. Like, I actually was like, oh, that was really good. That was like, you know, there have been a lot of Dark Horse comics, but this would have been, you know, Dark Horse Star Wars comics. This would have been one of the very much better mm-hmm. of those. Are we all agreeing on that?
Yeah,
this
absolutely.
Is, you know, this is taking what Brian Wood did and adding, it's very much what Brian Wood did, but it's adding definitely an upgrade in art and production and all that. And I would arguably say, the tone is more like the movies.
Yeah, I think it has more of a sense of humor.
So
it's more of a romp.
So, although the fact is, I don't know what Jason Wood's going to do to beat the guy who is the guy who designed the Death Star, who hates himself but lives in his like cave of lost dreams.
Jason Aaron.
I don't think he can beat that.
That was a great story.
That's the best thing that's ever happened in Star Wars. Anyways, what I was going to say is, Connor, you're saying that you're not sure if it's the right voice, and I was almost, if I had any problem with it, the thing that came up was that they were doing the thing where they were echoing things from the movies without repeating them. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the voices were pretty much spot on, but it was just like I think it was like, I have a very good feeling about this. It wasn't quoting it, but it was like tagging it. And having Luke like cut the guy's hand off. Mm-hmm. Like those kind of things, they're like subtle low-grade fan service. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I notice them, and I can't decide if I'm okay with it or not. Mm-hmm. I'm not so okay that I don't want to read.
Well, that is one thing I definitely wanted to talk about. This does feel like a very fan service-y book, but I would argue that it's in a great way.
Well, I mean, I would argue that that's him doing his job, really.
Yeah.
Yes.
It should
be
a fan service-y book.
I mean, right the way you got Forlom thrown into the mix, that could have been anybody, but like let's
could
have
been Zuckuss.
It could have been Zuckuss. It could have been Dengar.
I was happy with Forlom, and not just because I've got a Forlom bust in the office here.
Are you guys like me that if you hear the word Zuckuss, you immediately think being made of gas, or if you hear Dengar, you automatically go Swoop Bike Pilot? Like I can't, like I just want to be like, I want to talk about the tails of the bounty hunters.
Swoop Bike Pilot is sort of second, and then the first is like diaper on his head.
And I read it like 15, 16 years ago, one time.
Yeah.
But it's bursting at the surface.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's a problem.
And I mean, and like you get all the vehicles in here, and I kind of don't want to give away sort of the one towards the end. And
yeah.
One of the other cool ones, and this isn't giving too much away, the last page that's right out of the Ralph McQuarrie, like production, you know, sketches or paintings, mm-hmm. you know, portfolio. That's like, it's a moment that was drawn for that and is so iconic, but it's not even in any of the movies. I mean, there are iterations of it, those two characters coming together, but that particular scene at this end of the timeline, we don't have that in the movies, but it's something that like I remember watching the QVC like Star Wars specials and them having the lithograph of that and be like, oh, that's so cool. And so that one was kind of a geek out fan service moment for me. And the whole sequence with, you know, Sniper Chewbacca with the bowcaster, that was really fun. Just a great use of the characters.
I think the story was fantastic. What I would like to talk about is the art.
Yeah.
Which I struggled with.
Really?
A lot. Yeah. Cassidy draws really great aliens and he draws a really great Wookiee. But mm-hmm. the problem is he is trapped in that way that often happens where when you're doing books with characters that are based on real people, that sometimes
okay, yeah,
it's really, really close. Sometimes it looks like it's a melty wax faced version of them, and sometimes it doesn't look like them at all. And I'd rather just have a consistent face model
mm-hmm.
than try to get them to look exactly like the actors. I mean, there's one shot,
thing Brian Wood's book did very well.
Right. And there's one shot of Luke in here that doesn't look like it's modeled at all. It's when he's facing off against the guy with the laser whip. And mm-hmm. he says, I won't reach for my blaster. That panel looks like Mark Hamill without trying to, looks like a trace from a DVD scene. And I was almost wishing that's the kind of way he would have drawn him the whole time instead of having.
Yeah, there are, I think in particular, there's a lot of shots of Leia
yeah.
that are very, they're kind of rough. They're like, the face isn't sort of centered on her head the right way because it looks like he's going off of a photo or something.
And it's just, it's tough when it becomes distracting when their faces are so radically different from panel to panel, page to page. We used to talk about that with Greg Land all the time, how his characters look wildly different from page to page. And it's just, it became distracting.
I kind of, with the pace of the books, like I was kind of amazed at how many beats are in this issue, like mm-hmm. just yeah, how much he accomplishes.
Exactly. I mean, which is like part and parcel with Lucas's idea, yeah. at least for the original movie. For episode four, that is the correct thing.
You know, it really moves. That's the thing, like seeing the behind the scenes stuff where Lucas wants you to look louder, faster. You know?
Well, not only that, but like he very specifically didn't want you to. He didn't want to explain a bunch of stuff. You show up at the beginning. You don't know who these people are coming onto the bad guys in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't explain anything. There was the crawl, but that was it. And they did that here, which I'm gonna assume was a conscious choice and a really good one.
I really liked that one character who we're not going to name using stormtroopers as body shields.
This is pretty dope. That was a great sequence.
Yeah.
I mean, and like what's cool about this is Aaron seems to be consciously aware of, okay, I've got a Jedi here, or I've got characters with force abilities. And so that they think in a different way, they operate, they react in a different way than other characters would.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're hypersensitive to things. So if you've got, as cool as it is to have a Wookiee sniper, you know, you're not always going to get away with it if someone who uses the Force is around.
I don't know how they're going to get off that planet considering these creatures have completely dismantled the Millennium Falcon.
That also just felt right out of Star Wars too, that it's like it's always like out of the frying pan into the fire.
Right.
And so like they hid the Millennium Falcon in this thing, but then at the and that, you know, that's sort of like an Empire where they're hiding in the sort of the stream of junk in space, but then, you know, the Slave One can also easily hide in there too.
Right.
So it's, you know, getting into all these scrapes and things. I loved 3PO as sort of a means of exposition, because 3PO is a means of exposition. Mm-hmm. He is a through line through the movies and any of the media that we've seen. And the idea of 3PO being asked to use a blaster is just hilarious to me. I don't know. I just I really like his sense and confidence with the characters.
Right.
That they all behave, you know, in that certain way. And
I agree with that.
This is just so much fun. I really had a good time with this.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
And this is I don't have an answer on this. It's a thing that I was thinking about, though. When I look at it, I thought it looks like a Cassaday book in terms of whatever his sort of cinematic visual style is. A lot of canted angles, a lot of sort of vanishing points and things like that. And in that way, it's very un-Star Wars-y. And then my question is, does that matter? And also, just to highlight this sort of sideways, when I saw the trailer for the new movie that's coming out, I just thought, it doesn't look like Star Wars. And that bothered me. I don't know that it should. I guess they're getting a bunch of different people's takes on them going forward. But, like, what do you think of that?
I think that's something that's more noticeable when you're looking at a film to a film. So in seeing the trailer, yeah, I can definitely see that.
Which is funny because I didn't see that at all in the trailer. I thought it looked a lot like Star Wars.
I think part of it is hidden with, like, having the music, you know, and... Mm-hmm. So you're sort of like, oh, it's Star Wars, you know, and so you're not necessarily looking at the subtleties of composition or something.
Because in this book, like the first thing is, and I read it digitally, so actually I think it works really well in that sense. Like you flip it and you see that long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, then you get the logo. And so I'm watching it on, I'm looking at a screen. So automatically I was like, oh, that works. And so that first page, that's an echo of the first shot.
Right.
You know, coming overhead. And then afterwards you switch to this, you know, sort of radically tilted camera. And the place that I actually noticed it, because otherwise I just felt like I'm looking at Cassaday. It's Cassaday drawing like Cassaday. I don't know what else I would expect. But like when they go into the facility, you know, and we're looking down that hallway and we're 45 degrees over to the right, I was like, that didn't really look like Star Wars at all. Didn't look like any of them. But I don't know that that's a bad thing. It's just a thing I noticed.
I will be entirely honest, and I didn't sort of go into it that way. I didn't notice it. It wasn't as glaring.
I guess it'd be one thing if they started like that, but they didn't stay like. Didn't
okay.
Like that.
Well, but then the other thing is, since it's another medium, I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
that's fair.
You mean like in a movie, like you kind of want to have a little bit more continuity, a little bit more consistency there.
That's a question though. Do you? Like, that's a question. Do you? Like, if there's one thing that was consistent through all six of those movies, they pretty much had a standard visual style. I can't think of a lot of canted angles in any of that. I can't think of, there wasn't a ton of moving camera, for example. Mm-hmm. Like, the color palette was all pretty straight up. Or at least sort of the lighting. Like, there wasn't much.
Well, I think for a trilogy, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's an interesting question. I don't know.
Whereas like the J.J. Abrams thing, that looked like a J.J. Abrams movie. It looked like the Star Trek movie.
I'm kind of okay with that. Only that one shot of the Stormtroopers. The rest of them looked very Star Wars-y.
I guess we haven't seen enough of it, but I think I'd be okay. I'd be more okay with that because it's so far removed. You know, it can be its own trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think this bodes well for these books.
You have a good feeling about this?
I have a good feeling about it. I think it helps that they're putting high-quality talented people on here. Now, that doesn't take away from the other stuff that Dark Horse is doing. Like Josh said, I think the Brian Wood book had really great stories, and I also think the thing it did better was the visual style was less concerned with getting the characters exactly like their actors and more concerned with telling a story consistently, mm-hmm. Which I found... I liked the art better by Carlos Danda in the Brian Wood book than I did in the John Cassaday here.
You have a thing with John Cassaday though.
No, he used to be one of my favorite artists. I just don't like when characters don't look the same.
But you haven't liked John Cassaday's stuff of recent note in a while. like either because he changed or, you know, whatever reason, like it doesn't do it like it used to, which is always like, that's like the John Byrne effect. We're just like, man, I used to really love this and now I don't. And that bothers me more than it would if it was just like an artist of his own right, I guess.
Yes and no. I mean, yes, but also we're going to talk about that again in a couple of books.
Okay.
There's an artist who isn't John Cassaday.
Okay.
There's an artist who isn't John Cassaday.
There is one. But in the meantime, we should talk about Batgirl 38, in which Barbara Gordon feels the wrath of social media. And I really like this book a lot, more with each issue. And really, we used to talk about this a lot. This really feels like how DC should have rebooted originally, which is make the characters feel more vital and real to the world that we're in now, as opposed to go backwards to the 90s. And this Batgirl feels like a book that takes place now, full of characters that live now. And not just because they use cell phones and apps and go on dating sites like Tinder, but because it feels very contemporary. The fashions, the way people talk and interact feels very real. And for a character who's in college like she is, it's very important that you embrace all this stuff if you want to have that feeling. And I think this book does it really well.
Yeah, and the early sequence with Barbara walking down the street, that outfit, I was like, it's odd to think of that as Barbara, because I'm so used to, at least in the Batgirl books that I've liked, mm-hmm. Or the Barbara books, I should say, there's always that sort of throwback thing. She's always sort of like Nancy Drew.
Right.
And you know, and then in the Batgirl books that I don't necessarily like as much, it's a 90s thing. And then, so it was weird to see her in sort of a contemporary sort of setting and a contemporary, you know, look. And I like the sort of the thrust of this issue, which is she's, you know, hanging out with this cop, and he's got, you know, sort of one sense about it's such a classic superhero thing,
right?
Especially in the superhero books, where the secret identity is a major factor, where you have, you know, you're in a conversation and
it's like someone Flash says, right now, like, on TV.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, he's, you know, she's a vigilante, she should just let, you know, the police do their work and not get in the way, and then she kind of goes on to prove his point in a way.
Yeah, I thought it was really great. I guess we can call this a one shot story. I mean, even though the B story is going to continue, this sort of main story is wrapped up. You know, the whole argument with her new boyfriend is Batgirl good or bad for the city? And she obviously thinks she's good, and everyone on social media loves her. She's back, hashtag Batgirl of Burnside, and all the people in the neighborhood love her.
And I love the scene on the subway where you see someone's wearing the boots, the yellow boots, because she's sort of become not just a superhero or like a hero, but like a fashion icon with the costume.
But then she's to stop the criminal in this book, she ends up on a wild car chase that ends up crashing into a diner, and it turns, you know, it's like the old classic diner in the neighborhood that has been around for 50 years and everyone goes to, and now it's ruined and the guy can't afford to rebuild, and now the neighborhood has lost this gem, and everyone now hates her, turns on her on social media. So it was an interesting look at both the conflict of the vigilante, but also the fickleness of modern social media life.
Do you think comic book writers would have anything to say about that?
And I think the thing that makes it work is that the boyfriend isn't totally right and isn't totally wrong.
Neither one of them are totally right and totally wrong. Which
right, exactly. And so, like, usually you'd have one that you're like, oh man, he's being such a jerk. But this is an instance where they both have, you know, good points, and they both, you know, aren't considering the entire thing. And so that's a more valuable discussion to have. And, you know, I really like this issue. This is one of my favorites of the run so far.
Yeah. It's been getting better, I think, with each issue. I've liked each one more than the last.
And again, I'm continually blown away about how much they can cram into one issue.
Right.
This book in particular, there's so much happening. It's not a super quick read, and so you feel value there, so that's good.
No, not Josh, obviously. Paul, did you read S.H.I.E.L.D. number one?
I read it, asshole.
Okay. on the All Media show, you were saying how the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show was not something of your liking, and this is basically the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show.
I watched like a half an hour of the first episode, and I saw that Mark Waid wrote it, so I thought, I'm gonna try to read this too.
Okay.
So I read the first two issues.
I have
probably not going to keep reading it.
It's Mark Wade, so I'm kind of interested, but S.H.I.E.L.D. as a concept, it's not really something that I'm excited about.
I really like the first issue quite a lot. What's interesting, though, is they felt both a different artist. Carlos Pacheco drew the first issue, and Humberto Ramos did this issue, in which Ms. Marvel shows up for a team-up. And so this is not like an adaptation of the show, but it's the characters from the show minus a few of them. It's basically Coulson and Agent May and Fitzsimmons. I don't think anybody else has been on, right? Anyway, this is related to the Star Wars conversation in which they have no idea how to draw Coulson in this book. And that happened in the first issue, too.
I had no idea who I was looking at. And I didn't know if I was looking at characters from the show that I didn't know or what, but I didn't know who the hell anybody was.
And from panel to panel, Coulson would age and get like, look at the page where he finally tells Ms. Marvel that she can go, you know, be hero, and she runs off with the long legs. And in one panel, he's kind of dashing and handsome and muscular. In the next panel, he looks like Tommy Lee Jones. And they're literally consecutive panels. And I think...
And they're all in the same outfit.
It's a problem when I think these artists get yippy about making these characters look a certain way as opposed to just having a character model. And now it's just all over the map with these characters. But you're right. Also, if they don't identify who they are, like I didn't realize I was looking who these characters were from the show until their names were called because, you know, they're just people. So they've got to do a better job, I think, of captioning I realized in the very beginning it says, On the title page, it says it's going to be Agent Coulson and Agent Simmons. Fine, but on the first page, I don't know that's supposed to be Agent Simmons until a couple of pages in, or the second page when she texts him. But also, Paul, do you think, and you're the Agent Coulson expert.
Okay.
You famously wrote many articles about him on Knife.
We had a Coulson week, yeah.
Would Agent Coulson
text like a 16-year-old girl?
Oh, see, that's a tough call because...
My mom does.
Within the movies.
Well, that's why I'm asking.
I mean, within the movies, like from one movie to another, his characterization could be a little bit different. Like if you're thinking of like the Avengers Coulson, who has like baseball cards of Captain America, maybe. But
is it a funny thing? I could see that being played for a Joss Whedon style joke.
Right. But then like Thor Agent Coulson, not so much.
Yeah, so I didn't feel like he would write the number two instead of writing out two or you instead of writing out YU. I just don't.
That's just I would think the joke right would be he would be overly formal in texts.
Right.
Like he would spell things out, yeah.
And use proper punctuation on everything. And I just feel like it just felt like an off note to me. But other than that, though, I really do think this is a fun book. I like those characters from the show. And we actually get to see them interact with the Marvel Universe here, which we won't in the show itself, so... That's fun. But I like the Humberto Ramos art a lot. I don't know the last time I saw him draw anything.
I feel like he's been around, but I don't think I've been reading that stuff.
Right. I just feel like it's probably some book I'm not reading, but I haven't seen him in a while. And I always did like him.
So when the first issue of the new volume of Stumptown came out, I think Connor and I, not so much Paul, or was it the other way around? Yeah.
No, you and I felt the same.
Yeah, okay. That it was like, oh, this is a lot of soccer stuff, which is fine, but I didn't feel like Stumptown...
Yeah, and I kind of like the slow burn of it.
Yeah, then I kind of fell behind on it, and I read like the second, third, and fourth issues like a month ago or something like that, and I got really, really into it. And then so the fifth issue, which is the last of this arc, I think. Is it the last? Or is there one more?
Could go either way. Seems like the last.
Right. Fifth issue came out this week, and I really liked the story. I thought it was actually some of the best – character stuff that we've seen of Dex since the beginning. We learn way more about her than we ever have and sort of flesh her out as a person. Although I don't know that it feels like it used to. I don't know that that's a problem though.
See, for me, that first issue, I didn't hate it, but it didn't jazz me up. So I have all the issues sitting here and I haven't read any.
Oh, I think you should read them. And I think that you will be happy by the end.
I'm sure I will. I just, every time I would go to do it, I would go, but I'm not really excited about this, so I would go on to something else.
Yeah, keep going. I think also, I mean, I don't think the art is as strong as it was before, which is a factor. Yeah. You know, and I think Matt Southworth was definitely, he was slow. But at the end, like, it was a visual style that I associated with that book. And this feels like a slightly lesser version of it rather than somebody like in Queen of Country, when the other person would come in, they would famously bring their own style. You know, like they went from Norton to Somni to Leandro Fernandez. Like that book looked different every arc. Yeah. Whereas this one, it was sort of trying to ape what it had done before. And end of the day, though, I really liked it, and it was what I wanted out of this book. And I kind of got it. I think when the whole soccer story started up, it felt like it was from out of nowhere. And I was like, is this even a thing?
I don't know if it felt like out of nowhere. It just felt like a waste of a lot of real estate to me.
I think that's it was in that first issue. I think it was a weird first issue for that.
It was just like, I know I like soccer.
Sure.
I know Greg Rucka likes soccer, but...
why are we talking about soccer?
Why are we talking so much about it?
We're at work here, people.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. But no, I definitely recommend. I think you should go back in. I think at the end, you know, like you... really get, I have a much better sort of handle on who Dex Perios was, and I don't think we had that for a while. I think it's like one of those things like with the TV show. For a while, you know, you're just watching James Garner run around doing stuff, and you don't really know him.
And it's awesome, because he's fantastic.
I know, but when you get
trailer
to,
in Malibu.
When you get to know him, he's even better, is my point. And I think that's the point that he got to. It's kind of a shame that this doesn't come out more often, that there's not more there, and I completely understand why. I think it has to do with, you know, a fickle marketplace who's perhaps not supporting it to the level that it would need to make it more of a priority for the creators. How's that?
Right.
But it was good. It was worth it. You should read it. Don't
yeah, I think so too.
Jupiter's Legacy, I was happy to see came out again, but I was really lost just trying to remember what had happened and who everybody was. I eventually remembered most stuff by the end, but it was like, oh...
I got to say, I thought I was going to be, and I had that feeling at the beginning, and then once it started going, I just went, oh, right. And then at the same time, like, how lucky are we as comic book enthusiasts for Frank Quitely?
Yeah.
I mean, just, it's not even, I can't put my finger on what it is that he does so well, but I love that he does it. I mean, he's like... He's like
it's the drawing, Josh.
I know. Well, he's like the way that he does it. He's like one of the only guys out there who can look over at Matteo Scalera and go, "No, no, it's fine. You keep going. We're good.
Whatever.
We're fine here."
Good day. Good pictures.
Pat him on the head. Nice job.
I really thought that. I thought the issue delivered in a way like we had to wait for a really long time.
It was super fun.
It was so good.
It's. Part of that Mark Miller renaissance has been going on for the last couple of years, and it's really I mean, it's taken dark turns. There was the brutal death of that one character early on. It was last year. But for the most part, it's not really exploitative, and it's just an interesting look at legacy, but a darker look at it, mm-hmm. in that some of these legacy characters aren't good.
I really like how big the odds are against them, the way that they built this world up. You're like, and they thought they were screwed, so they you know, they're gonna proceed that way. And I remembered enough that, all right, that's the brother. And she's like, I had it by the end. And I think the part that was confusing was in the beginning, you were watching that scene where he was interrogating the girl, and we didn't know, wait, is that the girl? That's where my confusion came from.
That's my confusion was too.
So as soon as that reveal came, and Frank Quitely, you draw as many giants as you want. Like, for what, that guy puts one big ass character in the foreground next to a building that's the height of its shin, and I'm on that bus all night. That's great. You can do that.
I also think the pencil thin mustache should come back.
Only on villains?
Yeah, yeah. That's the way that way you know right away.
Right.
That's
what that shield book needs to do.
Yeah, start pulling. They should put mustaches on.
Start
dirt.
Handing out those pencil thin mustaches. I'm just saying, when Batroc comes along, you know where you stand.
Right.
That's what you want.
Then it gets confusing if you're in the Golden Age of Hollywood though, and Clark Gable walks up to your table, and you're like, "Are you good or bad?"
Well, I mean, let's go with what your gut tells you. Occam's razor, that shit. Clark Gable's evil.
That's true. Well, now there's been how many? What number is this of Jupiter's Legacy?
This is five.
Five.
And I think honestly, over that time frame, I think we're pretty lucky to have it. Considering,
I think we're probably lucky to get four a year. And that's fine.
Anybody else is? I'm completely cool with that.
Yeah, 4 a year. I'd be thrilled if we got 4 a year.
So wait, so is there's not a Jupiter's Legacy collection yet, right?
There haven't been enough issues. This one, though, was said late end of, like, Act 1 or whichever it was.
This would be the last issue of it. Yeah, book one.
And that's going to be the $9.95 trade that you're going to tell people, hey, if you like superheroes and you want something modern, this is going to be the thing for you to read.
And how would they get – where could they get that, Josh?
Fools be going to Amazon.com – or no. Jeez, I screwed it up. iFanboy.com don't go to Amazon first. That's going to screw up everything. Go to iFanboy.com/Amazon, and that way that's our special link. And then you can just bookmark that. And if you do that, then there is an affiliate program where we get a cut of the things that you spend there, and you have to do nothing for it. Do you hear me? Nothing. So if you needed the Gone Girl Blu-ray delivered so that you had time to watch it tonight, then we're gonna take a little sliver of that. I already saw it, but I bought it because it's a David Fincher movie.
There you go.
And there we go.
It's a nice box. It comes in a nice box.
The envelope's up there. I haven't opened it yet.
Yeah.
I figured I'd need two. I had to order it to make sure that I got it on Friday because I figured I'd need two nights for my wife to make it through without falling asleep.
two nights? It's a long movie.
Yeah, I know, but it's really good.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it.
A lot of people don't like it, but if you're like a David Fincher guy, at the very least, it's interesting. Like, it doesn't even, like, but it's good. I liked it. Anyway, so you can go to Amazon like that through ifanboy.com/Amazon. The things that you do help us directly, and we really appreciate that. You can also go to ifanboy.com/registration to be even more direct if you would like to make a straight-up cash donation to support what we do here and cover some of our costs. That is ifanboy.com/registration. You can either do $3 a month or $30 a year if you just want that to be a thing. You don't have to think about it, or any amount that you so desire. And we are, as always, eternally thankful for that. It really is a huge help. And the people who do it are wonderful angels.
And they become iFanboy members.
Yes.
By going to registration. And we're going to be bringing back the iFanboy member giveaways this year. So where we will randomly give out just boxes of books to random members of iFanboy.
Stop.
So start keeping your eyes and ears out. Well, your ears, because if it's your eyes, then you're looking in my window, and then we've got a law enforcement problem. But
no one wants to see that.
Keep your ears open. I'll tell you
something. He ain't thinking for 3 hours.
Keep your ears open. I don't work from home anymore, so it's less of a problem. Keep your ears open, and we'll be bringing those back.
All right, so a lot of people were talking about Grayson, which is a book that I fell back on. It's an interesting premise. It's sort of this idea that Dick Grayson is no longer Nightwing, but he's now in this weird sort of spy program, and they wear this.
The world thinks he's dead.
The world thinks he's dead. He's got like this thing that cloaks his face so that people can't recognize him. I'm glad I picked up this issue because there's a wonderful moment where he and Matron, his partner,
that's Helena Burnell.
Yeah, are infiltrating this compound, and Midnighter shows up, and Midnighter's like, "Well, I can't see your faces, but that doesn't mean I don't recognize that ass, because Dick Grayson is known for that."
For
Dick Grayson,
say that ass.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Does it say dad ass?
No,
that's just a stupid internet meme.
He's like, "I know that ass," and then like the next panel is Grayson. And there's,
he says, "I'd know that ass anywhere."
I'd know that ass anywhere. Yeah, it's just a wonderful magical moment.
And also, they've been teasing us with the inevitable Midnighter Grayson fight, and this is where the first time we get it.
Cool. Yeah, because like it feels sort of like episodic television, where like he shows up in certain episodes and he's gone for a little while, and then he's back, and they do have a really cool fight, and there's a fun moment where Dick Grayson is fighting like Nightwing would, and Midnighter is, you know, catching punch and everything. But then
because he studied tapes of him as Nightwing,
yeah, because that's what Midnighter does. And then
I thought he just knew.
Well, he had to know from a source.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then he says, "But have you ever fought Robin?" And so he switches up his fighting style to his original, you know, Robin fighting style. And he says, like, off. it's
yeah, he takes his pants off.
Takes
first.
His pants off. Yeah. And he refers to it as like Nightwing is jazz and Robin is punk rock. Which, okay.
I thought it was a really nice sort of badass, you know, line where Midnight is talking about how Nightwing fought like jazz and how he can play jazz too. And so then, you know, Dick says, "Well, have you ever fought Robin? If you can do jazz, but how about punk rock?" And that was a nice little switcheroo.
It's just a neat idea because these two totally different personas, and that, at least in his mind, it's you know, it works. The strategy works. It's two different styles of fighting,
right?
Which is kind of cool. So this was fun, and it's got sort of a little bit of a checkmate thing going on. Like, mm-hmm. you have these secret organizations and stuff, but then there's also paranormal things and superheroes involved. So if you miss that that checkmate stuff. I think they've tried to do checkmate kind of things in the New 52 with like the Justice League of America and right. and having things.
But this is much closer to that government. Rucka book.
Yeah, but this this is the right balance and it's fun. And so I was glad I tried this out.
So Batman Eternal continues to be the book where every week I go, I guess I'm still reading this, and I open the new one. And this is issue 41.
Is that right? It's 41?
Yeah, 41 weeks. 41 weeks. That's how fast life is going
by. I was shocked when I wrote that. Really?
So this is actually one of the issues I did like a lot because I like the issues of this that are having to do with the sidekicks and not Batman in the main story, which I still don't really care about. But in this issue, Red Robin and Batgirl in the new costume and Red Hood team up to fight the Mad Hatter, which is almost completely just divorced from the main story. And Harper is also there, and so she's sort of their oracle because they won't let her go into battle because...
Is she Bluebird? Is that her?
Well, that's you're jumping on my
sorry.
On my punchline. So she's been helping them track down the Mad Hatter, who's been all these kids have been disappearing, including her brother, and they won't let her go into battle because Red Robin says, you know, once you make that decision to go, you know, to put on a spandex suit and jump into the fray, you're never going to go back. It's just that's how it works. And he doesn't want that life for her. So, but the problem is Mad Hatter ends up taking control of all their minds. So she is forced to, for the first time, don the Bluebird costume. That's the cliffhanger. But okay. Also Joe Quinones, pronunciation probably incorrect, drew the book. So it looked really great.
Good.
And, All the characters I really like in this story were in this issue. So if you, Paul, you could totally read this issue not knowing anything else about what's been going on.
I will. I like all those characters, and I like Joe Quinones, so.
I believe it's pronounced quinoa.
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 He's a good artist and also healthy. Snack.
Yeah. It's
you know true. How you know how I know the pronunciation?
He's from the Northeast. He's from around my neighborhood.
I know that from the Nick Offerman Netflix special. That's how I know how to pronounce quinoa.
Is it good? I wanted to
see it's it. Weird.
Yeah, that's why I figured it would be, and that's why it's just been sitting there.
It's really weird. He gets really like crass and provocative, and it's a kind of uncomfortable, like because he's trying a little bit too hard. But
all right.
Not a stand up. Lazarus 14. Just because I don't think that Greg Rucka can feel good enough about himself. Actually, I guess a sort of similar thing to say about this is that this was one where I think that he made they made like a real advance in understanding of our character forever. I think like she is breaking down walls, you know, like she got that text that was like, they're not your family, etc. And then she, you know, she had that conversation with the brother, Jonah, in this issue, and she's moving forward. So we're going to see advancement in that. And then sort of the capper was the ending, which was that she's going to have to sort of fight against people who are, you know, she's supposed to fight against them, but they're her friends, and so it's the Hunger Games. But it was really good. I'm like, oh, I want the next thing, and you know, threat level
did
remains.
You the letters column.
I didn't. No, I was in a hurry.
It was full of a lot of letters who were like, "Is this gonna get canceled?"
Do they not know about me?
So it's still a great book.
Yeah,
wonderful.
Yeah, no, it was. I thought it was a really nice. I'm not getting that feeling of yep, it's good again. Like every, you know,
no.
Reveals and still stuff, and I really liked the ceremony of how they sort of dealt with the things that happened there, like amongst their family and the rules and you know, the haves and the have-nots and how that works. I still enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. I want to mention Deadpool number 40. We
Koblish guy
Scott Koblish.
I just assume when I see it in the rundown that that's
it's Scott Koblish. This is really funny.
Oh, it's great. We get them every like 5 or 6 months, and
this is an interesting issue. There's a lot going on. It's drawn like an instructional like an educational coloring book for kids about fracking, but they're calling it gracking in here.
Very 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 thinly veiled.
That's sort of the first half, and it has Agger, the Roxxon guy from Jason Aaron's Thor run. I think that's where he originated, right?
He's
from the Jason Aaron run.
He's still in it. I mean, like, he's involved.
But I mean,
in the
I was like, is that
we're in the middle
that's
of?
That's his first appearance. He wasn't from before. Like, that's a Jason Aaron creation.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, anyways, the Grocking and Roxxon is involved, and it's also sort of a Christmas issue, and then it also mentions that there's going to be a celebrity coming in, and it turns out to be Sarah Silverman is involved in like the protests against Gracking. But then as you keep going, there's an even more important and fun cameo, and there are two cameos. Jason Aaron and Jason Latour show up, and something terrible happens to Jason Latour, which I've been wondering all week on Twitter why people have been saying, rest in peace, Jason Latour, and now I know why. Because I didn't get to this until earlier today. I didn't realize it was a Scott Koblish week. But anyways, this was super weird and super fun. Just funny. If you haven't been reading it up to this point, you can still read it and enjoy it.
Points to Val Staples.
Val Staples, yeah.
For coloring, although it's like it's more badly colored in the beginning than at the end. Like I just thought,
yeah.
At the end, I was like, oh, it's still the crayon thing, but it's not sort of as intentionally. Well, the way I
come. Which makes sense. Like in the beginning, you want to sell the effect of it.
And but they never got away from it.
They don't entirely. But it's like.
It's a very good Jason Aaron likeness. Also Latour, but I haven't met him as much. So.
It was great. It was really funny and fun stuff. So
what could there be left to say about Daredevil? Look at that cover. Oh.
That's kind of what I want to talk about.
I actually have something to say about Daredevil beyond the cover.
Okay.
I don't like him in San Francisco.
No?
And I realize he's been there before and it's not a new thing, but he doesn't feel like Daredevil to me, not in New York.
I don't think that's the point, though.
But I'm not enjoying it.
Well,
as much.
To be honest, you're a New York guy.
You're a New York guy. Yeah, but he's also so ingrained. Like, that is, Daredevil is not only ingrained in New York, but ingrained in a neighborhood, and that's part of his identity. Mm-hmm. It'd be like, well, we're going to move Batman to San Francisco.
But they do that every once in a while.
Years.
You know,
it doesn't feel the same.
No. It shouldn't. You just
let's do a test here. What's your favorite baseball team?
I know this.
I'm not answering your questions. What I'm saying is that
let me ask you this:
Which do you prefer? New York pizza or San Francisco pizza?
I don't even know what San Francisco pizza is.
It's because there isn't. How do you feel about the people of San Francisco as you walk around on the street? I rest my case. You watch. I gotta say, the only thing I love, this all won for me with Matt piloting that muscle car convertible up Powell Street with his canes. That's great. Good to go.
I thought it was a fun story. I just feel like it doesn't feel like Daredevil to me. But that's all.
Yeah, it'll go back.
Not according to this. He's gonna live there the rest of his life and get old and die.
Well, I don't want to go back to like sort of Bendis Daredevil.
You believe that?
Oh, they say it's gonna be like this forever. No, not at all. But hey,
what's Captain America got a book for?
I love when like every third or fourth Daredevil issue ends with Matt dipping somebody and kissing them. Like that's fun.
I would. If he dipped tobacco, would that be the same for you?
Ding. I said someone. I dipped something.
Oh. It'd be an interesting twist on the character. I'm sure there's a whole dipping community in San Francisco.
It's like a hipster thing. It's like artisanal dip.
When I was in San Francisco last week, there was not
the word hipster. I'm not going to do that. I'm out. It's out of my vocabulary.
Well, unfortunately, the entire town is full of hipsters now. But there was not one guy on his corner playing guitar for money. There was an entire band.
Yeah.
All of the pieces.
Yeah. And they were probably, they probably had a hose, and they were just spraying it
the street
for no reason.
Yeah. So, I liked the story. I liked the idea of the old stunt driver who was looking for one last piece of glory.
Yep.
I thought that was good.
And great, you know, great chase sequences and stuff, and just good comic booking. That, again, like, it's always great. It's another great Daredevil.
If you're gonna do a San Francisco story, you kind of have to have a car chase.
Yeah,
because hills.
But there's you can't drive there at any kind of speed. The car chase would be inching along in traffic.
It's not. Yeah. Well, you're just avoiding fixies.
So there's all those famous movies with
again.
car chases that take place in San Francisco, like The Rock.
They're lies.
It's bullying. Or there was one in, I think there was one in Zodiac.
And the Italian Job.
Yeah. Yep.
Born Identity.
Con Air. And they broke the windshield and then it was fixed in the next shot. What is that about?
Oh, boy. Well, those are the comics that came out this week. Those are actually a couple of really great comics, including Silver Surfer.
Because the problem with Michael Bay movies is a continuity edit.
I will defend Con Air and The Rock.
I know you will. Actually, it's The Rock. It's not Con Air.
Yeah, it was The Rock. Wasn't it Sean Connery? I love The Rock.
I know you do. But you love things
that are. The Rock is so fantastic.
Fine with that.
So those are the comics we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com to talk about other books or these books or whatever books you want to talk about. There'll be a post for this show. And every other show we have, you can go there and find those at ifanboy.com. Let's squeeze in a quick email from Dave from DC. And Dave says,
he's not here.
A couple years ago, I happened across the first two trades of Gotham Central. Strangely, I got through a couple of issues and never finished the series before it got lost in my pile of things I need to read. Strange because it's brilliant, beautiful, and deserving of all the hyperbole you all have heaped upon it. As a fan of Brubaker, Rucka, and Lark's current work, it's really neat seeing the beginnings of what they have gone on to write and draw. Looking through it now, one thing I'm finding unsettling is I never figured out who I'm reading. Is this Rucka or Brubaker? Did I miss the part where they explain this? Anyway, I'm sure this was the subject of many a conversation in some Ithaca dorm room somewhere.
We are older than that!
And you all figured it out. Could you enlighten me? Who wrote the different shifts? That might help me not shelf this beauty of a series before finishing it again. Thanks.
First of all.
Yeah, this book came out 3 years after we graduated college. Yeah.
This was the pick of the week, darling, at the very beginning of our tenure, though.
Yeah.
I wish I'd had time to prepare for this because I remember when I was reading. The thing is, this was so long ago that I didn't really even think about it back then.
Yeah. Well, there was a day shift and a night shift, and the one shift featured Renee Montoya, and that was the Rucka shift.
That's how you can tell. You're right.
So that was the night shift, wasn't it?
Yeah, so one shift had Renee Montoya and Crispus Allen and I think Josie Mack.
No, wait.
Well, Renee Montoya and Crispus Allen, that was the Rucka shift. And then the Romy cop and the cops you've never heard of again were the Brubaker cops.
Interesting.
But
Rucka brought them back over and over. I guess.
Well, Rucka had Renee and Crispus. Those are really the only ones that stuck around. Let's just refer
to him as the Spectre.
And then they had Jim Corrigan. He was at the end. He was the CSI guy.
Yeah.
And then Maggie Sawyer. Like, there was a lot of great characters.
That's Rucka. Like, just by mentioning the characters, I can tell you who wrote them. That's the thing. Like, when I read it originally, I didn't really know the difference. But when I went back and reread them, and I'll admit my own falling off. I think I have 3 of the 4 books that came out, and I just never got around to getting the 4th one. But I was rereading it, and I was like, this really is great. But at that point, I could tell.
But also, I mean, this isn't the beginning of their work. Brubaker and Rucka.
No, it isn't.
They had both been writing Batman comics for years before they did Gotham Central.
Yeah.
I mean, they were writing while we were in college.
They were writing Detective and Batman. Rucka on Detective, Brubaker on Batman. That was a good era.
Yeah.
It was a real good era. That was Sean Martinborough doing Detective with Rucka, where he invented, what's her name? Oh, I can't remember her name. The one from Checkmate. Yeah, the one from Checkmate.
Right. It was a good era, but this was sort of the culmination of their DC time and not the beginning of their
time. Yep.
This was, you guys are really popular writing our biggest books. You can write your cop book. Because I guarantee you DC was not excited about publishing it.
Can we talk about Michael Lark's Joker? I pretty much just did, but Michael Lark's Joker was fucking amazing.
I need to reread those. I've got the trades. I just haven't read them in a while. I read them a little while ago, but not recently enough.
Yeah.
But thanks, Dave, for assuming we're younger than we are. I always like to hear it.
That's awesome.
So you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can leave our voicemail. Leave us a voicemail, 888-FANBOYS, 326-2697. Tell us who you are and where you're from. And if you call our voicemail line, keep it around 30 seconds. And that's how you can get on the show. And speaking of which, we are about a month away from Valentine's Day. So we decided that maybe we should try doing another Valentine's Day themed episode. Last year, if you recall, we answered relationship questions. We did, of course, the book talk as normal.
Answers.
But then all the emails and voicemails were all relationship-based questions, having to do with comics in some way, but not necessarily at all. Somebody asked if we were going to do it again, and I thought, well, why not? Let's try it. So if you want us to do it again, it's up to you guys to email us and call us with your relationship questions. If we get enough to do it on a show, we will do them. If we don't get enough, then obviously we won't.
You're putting this in their hands.
It's all up to you guys. Wow. If you want to hear these relationship advice. Listen, and we are by no means trained or expert in this arena.
I would go so far as to say we're unqualified.
But we will still do it for the sake of your entertainment. So if you want us to do Valentine's Day relationship episode, email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call our voicemail line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697. You got another month to do it.
And so unfortunately, I won't be on that episode because that's our next announcement is this is going to be my last month as a weekly iFanboy guy. So we were talking before about this being 10 and 15 years. mm-hmm. for iFanboy. So 2015, I did some thinking over the holidays, and I'm gonna miss the hell out of this. But there's a couple of different things that I'm working on. Just personally, and then also like my I'm gonna be more involved in my family business and continuing to work with panels.net and the O Comics podcast, and so I had to make the very difficult decision to say I think this is going to be the end of this chapter, and hopefully if the guys will have me, you know, I'll stop by every once in a while and say hey, and you know, we can talk about some movies and stuff or some comics.
Well, somebody's got to see the movies because Josh certainly.
Yeah, that's true. So I'll
on Netflix later.
So I'll be happy to. I'd be honored and
well,
delighted.
The timing's
to come back,
fortuitous
so.
Because Josh and I were about to fire you.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's always good to get out on your own.
This is a very political kind of thing. I was like, oh, the hammer's going to drop, and so I better bow out.
You want to keep you want to be able to keep the pension.
Yeah.
Well, we're sad that you're going, but you know, we are happy that you're moving on to other things that you're excited about and taking care of things you need to take care of. That's always the priority. Is your family should always come first. So that's all. That's good. And we've been nothing but thrilled with the work you've done in the last 2 years as our co-host. It's not easy to step into something like this. It's been going on for that time 8 years and do it pretty seamlessly. So you did a great job, and I know both Josh and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you, and I've had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun in this past hour, and you know, part of me is like, oh man, you know, only a couple more of these. So I'm gonna you know, still have, you know, a few more weeks of shows. And
I think your last show we decided is going to be the show that comes out on February 1st.
February 1st. So yeah, all Groundhog's Eve. As it's traditionally known, I'm gonna miss the hell out of you guys because we've decided we're not going to stay in touch at all.
No,
because
you're dead to us after you leave.
Yeah, so it's
I'm almost too incredulous right now.
So
three more episodes. No,
I wanted to thank you guys for having me aboard, and I met so many amazing people and Josh through this, and I had so many great opportunities, and a lot of my best friends in the world, a lot of people that I'm working with on some projects are people that I would never have met if it weren't for iFanboy. So this is always going to be a really big part of my life, and I'm really grateful for it. So we're going to have a great last month of shows, and I'm looking forward to what you guys do next. Now I can listen to the show. I'm not on it.
So
you don't want to listen to the show when you're on it, but since I won't be ruining the show, I'll be glad to hear what you guys have to say about stuff and keeping up with you guys. So this is a tough one, but thank you guys, and thank you for everybody for all the listeners and giving me a shot after that other guy, and I really do appreciate it. So it's been fun.
Well. Josh is verklempt.
I'm not that. I don't know what to say. I mean, I knew about it, obviously, as a thing. And I don't want, like
you have to understand, I told them 5 minutes before we started recording this show.
Yeah,
so.
No, but like, Paul's super important to us. He's another brother. He's a guy who made this. I mean, you guys don't, I don't know if you know, but you know, there was a time where if Paul wasn't doing the website and like, that wouldn't have been a thing. Like Paul took a ton on his shoulders, and he came in and he dealt with us constantly calling him a child, and you know, filling in for a guy who like Ron, it's good you went in a different direction personality wise, but because who could take that, you know, that's not a small thing, like Connor used the word seamlessly, and you're not kidding. And then before we get all the questions, like the thing is, like, who are you gonna replace? We're not replacing it. We're not. Yeah. It's there's not even any point because, I mean, honestly, like Connor and Ron and I had known each other for years. We're best friends, you know. And Paul became that to us. You know, you can't build that. We're not gonna hold auditions. There's not another person. So
yeah,
we'll have guests sometimes. Paul will be a guest sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe.
We'll see. We'll see.
That's not a contract.
We'll see.
On episodes where Josh isn't on, I will be a guest.
So like every other week. So, I mean, what I would say is thank you. That's the only thing I have to add to it, I think.
And
we'll fully eulogize you in a couple of weeks. So
eulogize.
Get ready for that.
The Paul Montgomery roast. Okay. Well, and the one other thing, I'll be taking the book of the month reviews with me. We decided to discontinue the book of the month.
If you suck at something, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Well, the book of the month was really great when we had a multimedia empire going.
You could write
and when you could write about it, and I liked doing the old video shows, minis on it, and talking about the show. It sort of worked all in conjunction. What we found was once the writing stopped, it became less of a important piece of content for us. And I feel like it's been a really weak segment on the show. So we decided to cut it. So there'll be no more book of the months on iFanboy, books of the month. Like Surgeons General.
So instead, the show won't be adjusting or changing in any way.
Yeah, well, we can certainly talk about trades as they come out if we want to. It's just we won't be doing the books of the month. I mean, you may have noticed last year we even skipped one month.
We did three in a row in December.
Right.
And then there was the time that you did the one before. It was
before.
I think we did that last week. You know,
so. Astute listeners of the show will know that it wasn't. Strong segment, so we decided to cut that. So there'll be no more of those.
So instead, I'll be sending you guys email questions so to deal with my obnoxious questions.
Well, good thing nothing will change.
4,000 word ones that don't really say anything, but have.
I will haunt this show.
Head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show, talk about this week's books. You can talk about Paul.
Oh, God, please don't.
In your closet, in Paul's closet. If you know anything about Paul, if you grew up with him and went to high school with him, you can head over to ifanboy.com and comment there. Find all of our podcasts, everything we've done this year and last year and the last 10 years of podcasting is at ifanboy.com. Well, not all of it, but a lot of it.
Okay. You can follow us at Twitter. Twitter.com/iFanboy or Facebook.com/iFanboy. And you can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick or at J Flanagan, period.
Or Jeff Cannata. And finally, if you dig this sort of thing, write us a review on iTunes, or better yet, you can tell your friends about us, introduce your cousin Eustace to podcasts, help us spread that iFanboy love all
right. That's not cool. You know my cousin is deaf.
That's not right.
What? Eustace is a what?
That's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Josh.
You're staying though, right?
Yeah. A backless dress and some beat up sneaks. My discotheque, Juliet, teenage dream. I felt it in my chest as she looked at me. I knew we were bound to be together. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.